That's the unmistakable voice of Alison Krauss. The band, Union Station. 2011, the record is entitled Paper Airplane. And this is Lay My Burden Down. Just another record you need to buy. I keep giving you this great music, so go buy it. Hey, it's episode 4027 of Leaning Toward Wisdom. You can go to leaningtowardwisdom.com and just type into the search the website bar. Type in the number 4027. It'll take you right to the blog post. Today's entitled, When I Die. My obituary, it's already written. No, I'm not dying. Well, no more than most people. I mean, daily, I guess, we're all dying, bit by bit. Some of us more so than others, I guess. I don't remember when I first created a Word document, but I entitled it, When I Die. One day, I sat down, I created it. I wrote out everything I wanted to happen when I die. Now, if you go over to the show notes for today's episode, if I get my tongue untied, you will see a Ballard Street cartoon, my favorite cartoon. And there's a picture of Roger. Roger's gone down into his basement. He is staring at the circuit breaker box at his house. His fist on his chin. And the caption says, the blown circuit breaker has Roger considering issues surrounding his own mortality. There was not a circuit breaker moment that caused me to consider my mortality. The fact is, I've considered my mortality just about all my life. I've certainly considered it all my adult life. But I've also considered the mortality of the people that I love the most, and I will freely confess that I'm a guy, if I am preoccupied with the death of anybody, I am preoccupied with the death of my wife. No, I mean, she's not dying. Well, any more so than all the rest of us are dying. But just the thought of, you know, we're coming up on 37 years of marriage, and the thought of a life without her is, well, I can't fathom it. And I hope it doesn't happen. I've long told her I'm very selfish in this regard. I hope she has to learn how to live without me, and I don't have to learn how to live without her. If you have listened to or you have read my stuff, you know that I am a Christian. In fact, I'm trying to be a devout Christian, and we can all do better, and there are definitely times where I need to try harder. It is this never-ending quest. It's a process. And if you know anything about me, as well as being a Christian, you know that I'm a big believer in the process. And part of my Christian faith, a big part, focuses on the judgment. The fact that there is an eternity, a life beyond this life. And that changes everything. That changes everything about my perspective about this life and about death. I can't separate my faith from thoughts of my death. Well, I can't separate my faith from thoughts about anybody's death. Hebrews 9, chapter 9, verse 27. And as it is appointed for men to die once, but after this, the judgment. Before judgment comes death. Death is ever present. It's in the news, it's in movies and books, and they show it often. Some of the most impactful stories use it as a centerpiece. But when it comes to our own death, yeah, we're shifting around in our chair and we get queasy and uneasy, and we're tempted to hit the stop button on this podcast. Don't. Come on, hang with me. Trust me, you'll be better for it, I promise. death, we think of death as, well, death is a, it's a great spectator sport. We certainly don't want to participate. Robin Williams' death raised all kinds of speculation and commentary. People talked about mental health and Parkinson's disease and suicide and depression, and, you know, all sorts of conversations ensued after Robin took his own life. But I was thinking of death long before that. And it's not because I've got any knowledge of failing health, but it's because I know that, well, I know it's an appointment that we're all going to meet. I took my current Word document, and I'm a Mac guy, so I just went and I clicked get info about this file, and what it showed is showed that it was created on at least this particular file, and I don't have any reason to suspect that this isn't the original one, but it may not be. But this file, this document, was created on Monday, July the 7th, 2008, at 10 p.m. Again, I'm not positive that that's when I first created such a document, but maybe it is. I grew up attending funerals of church members. And, of course, all the funerals of my youth, they weren't. As I was growing up, you never went to the funeral home for a funeral. I mean, fact is, you didn't go to the funeral home. You never went to the funeral home. You went to the funeral home if you were part of the family and you had to arrange for the funeral and for the burial. No, the funeral, everything happened at the church house or at the cemetery. Singing hymns, hearing prayers uttered, standing at a graveside watching people mourn. I was fascinated by the pallbearers who would carry this casket up to the grave, and they would remove their lapel flowers and place them on the casket before it would be lowered into the ground. And then there was the open casket thing, and that was very odd to me. Now, as a little kid, I was taken to funerals, but as people were proceeding past the departed person, and there's the open casket, I was never taken. My parents thankfully spared me that. But I do have vivid memories of children being held in arms and parents coming up to this casket and even holding the child down to give a kiss to this departed person. And yeah, I thought that was creepy then. I think today it's even creepier. Thankfully, I don't see that much kind of behavior anymore. That whole thing, that open casket thing, seemed very odd to me. And adults would attempt to explain it to me by telling me that, you know, it gives people a sense of, well, it gives people a sense of finality. It gives people the sense that this person really is gone. As though if they didn't see the actual dead body in the casket, they might wonder, well, I guess they would wonder what we all wonder today about Elvis. Are they really dead? I have no idea how many funeral sermons I have heard in my life. And sadly, today, I can't remember how many funeral sermons I myself have preached. I hate doing it. Absolutely hate doing it. And not for the reasons you might think. I hate it because my empathy factor is outrageously high, and it makes it tough for me to hold it together. And it's not that I mind crying in public, but, you know, it's not particularly strengthening for the family if the guy preaching the funeral loses it. I mean, trust me, you don't want to be that guy. Our circuit breaker is eventually going to blow. The energy that we pass through from now until then, it's entirely of our choosing. And I'm not certain that it's all about passing through as much energy as possible, but rather I suspect it's more about passing through as much meaningful energy as we can. The electricity in your house can power a radio that can play the music that you find most annoying, or it can power a radio to play the music that you absolutely positively love. Same juice, different output. Thinking of death focuses me on the output instead of the input. Our lives today are comprised of input and output. Lives always have been. I suspect most of us focus on input because it seems easier. And we've grown accustomed to being spectators, to viewing, to watching, to listening. And so we read blogs and books and articles and ebooks, and we listen to music. And to be fair, when it comes to reading stuff, we scan over this stuff. And it's likely that few of us actually read the entirety of anything. The preacher who married us back in 1978, he's a book hound, and he has an extensive library of religious books. And once, while talking about other preachers who collected and accumulated these massive libraries, he made the remark, "The difference between me and them is I've read all the books in my library." And we chuckled, and it's true. I know him. I know him well. He has read all of his. And I'm suspicious that others have not. I'm guilty. I mean, I'll read a book or an article, and if it doesn't snag enough attention right away, then I'm either going to put it down or I'm going to begin scanning. And I didn't always scan. Well, okay. Some things I did. Textbooks. I used to read everything, grinding it out if it was uninteresting, because I felt as though, you know, I've invested this much time, I just need to keep at it and hoping against hope that it would finally grow exciting. It's a little bit like negotiation. If you learn anything about negotiating, you learn that there's this component called time, and you want to get whoever you're negotiating with, you want to get them to invest some time. Because here's the thought process. If somebody has invested a couple of hours with you haggling over the price of a car, they don't want you to walk away, because in their mind they're thinking, "Man, I've sat here with this couple for 2 hours. I got to make a sale out of this thing. I got to make this work some way, somehow." Yeah, see, it works. And sometimes we can do the same thing when it comes to consuming information. We feel like, you know, man, I've been reading this book for 2 hours. I hate to put it down and just forget about it and lose the 2 hours. I mean, and then we invest two more. And sometimes at the end of 20 hours, we think, well, there's 20 hours I'll never get back because it wasn't worth reading. Digital books, they haven't helped me much with this whole input focus. I mean, I love the portability of ebooks, Kindle books in particular. I hate the lack of tactile sensation. And I'll tell you what else I hate. I hate the lost sensation of a past, a present, and a future. Jeremy Rifkin, in an old book entitled Time Wars, he wrote about this, and it's always stuck with me, because he wrote about the old analog watches with the hands, an hour hand, a minute hand, and a second hand. He wrote about those watches and clocks versus the digital ones. Clocks with hands show us the past, the present, and the future. I mean, if I look at a clock and it says 4 o'clock, I can look and I can say, well, okay, 3 o'clock, that was previous, 2 o'clock was previous, and now 5 o'clock's coming up, and then 6 o'clock. But right now it's 4. The digital clock just shows 4. It just shows us the present, and such is the plight of the digital age. It makes sense. It makes sense that we have grown increasingly obsessed with input. Moore's law has been applied to a number of things, including information and data. And according to Science Daily, a full 90% of all data in the world has been generated over the past few years. But there's a lot more than just data happening. Click on the website, World of Meters, and you'll see a running tally of how many blog posts are being published in real time, and it's going to be in the millions. Every day. On June 22nd, 2012, Mashable published an article that has an infographic, and the infographic is entitled Data Never Sleeps, and it's about how much information is being published every minute. Well, no wonder we're focused on input. No wonder we're focused on consumption. There's a lot out there to consume. And besides that, all the luring headlines, they just captivate us. They suck us in like a carnival barker. Or a Bourbon Street doorman who hollers, "Hot and nasty inside." True story. I remember being down in New Orleans, and a friend of mine was with me. In fact, I'll talk about him a little bit later, but we were walking through the quarter, and here's a doorman who's, I don't know, 5 foot nothing. Loud, "Hot and nasty inside." We chuckled. And it's all designed to do exactly what we did as kids, you know, when we would prank somebody to look at something and then we'd say, made you look. The world is making us look. Well, okay, it's not making us look, but it's making it really difficult to avoid looking. Okay, right now, right this very second, I don't care where you're at, you can do this. You don't need pen and paper or anything else. Just right now, right this very second, I want you to think about dying. I want you to think about you dying. I don't mean the pain. I don't mean any of the process of dying. Just think about your death. Did that kill your desire to go read another blog? Yeah, see? Thinking about death, it'll focus you, right? Now, as you're thinking about your own death, you're not thinking about a new book. You're not thinking about a new movie. You're not thinking about buying concert tickets to your favorite band. You're not thinking about downloading their latest hit. You're not thinking about any of that. You're not thinking about what anybody can do for you. You're not wishing somebody would come over and help you paint your house or clean your garage or move these boxes around. Keep thinking about it. Keep thinking about your death. And I want to tell you what you're thinking. You're thinking about what you can do before you die. You're thinking about what you need to do before you die. And you know what else you're thinking? You're thinking about people. Mostly you're thinking about the people that you love. You're thinking about family. Maybe you're thinking about close friends. Now, you're not thinking about those internet friends. You're not thinking about your LinkedIn connections. You're not thinking about those Facebook friends. You're not thinking about those people that you follow or that follow you on Twitter. No, you're thinking about real life friends. You're thinking about the people who are in your favorites on your iPhone. And you're not thinking about them doing something for you. You're thinking about what you can do for them. Because when you consider your own death, you're going to start thinking about your actions. You're going to start thinking about your output. And it's going to be about what you can do for these people that you care about most. That's what you're thinking. Thinking of death focuses me on the important. And it does you too. I mean, try it. Think about your own death. And try to embrace a trivial thought at the same time. Go ahead, try. You can't. You can't. Not if you're really thinking about your death. The score of the ball game, that doesn't matter. Shoot, your job doesn't even matter when you're thinking about your death. The most important things that dominate your time, suddenly, they lose all value when you consider your death. You've likely experienced this, by the way, without thinking about your own death directly. I mean, these feelings have probably hit you when you learned about the death of a family member or a close friend. Well, shoot, it probably has happened to you when you've just heard about the death of an acquaintance. Because death is an instant priority correction tool. For me, it's spiritual. I mean, thinking of my own death forces me to consider seriously my relationship with God. It makes me think of whatever sin may be in my life that I know needs to be corrected, that is, repented of, confessed, and forgiveness needs to be sought through prayer. Yeah, I would hope it would have that impact for you too, because I think eternity matters. Thinking of my own death focuses me instantly on my wife and my family. Now, my tribe started with just me and Rhonda, just the two of us, a couple. And then came along our son, Ryan. Then came along our daughter, Renee. And all of a sudden, my tribe was four. Now, today, my tribe it includes a son-in-law, a daughter-in-law, and four grandchildren. That's my tribe. These are the people who instantly get priority in my mind when I consider my own death. I think about the things that I'd like to say, but maybe I have not yet said, or maybe I haven't said it enough. And I'm a podcaster, so it comes as no surprise that talking and communicating, that these are crucial things for me. And by the way, I am exactly what you hear. I am exactly what you see. Death makes me think even more about how I feel about these people, though, and about the things that I want to make certain that they know before I leave. But thinking of my own death focuses me also on the people that I serve at church. It's not a large group, but it's an important group. And like my family, I consider the things that I want them to know. And I think about some lessons that I'd like to teach them, some wisdom I'd like to pass on. And I consider some more specific things that have to do with spiritual living. And I think about my obligations to these people, my obligations to their spiritual welfare. Nothing else. That's it. I mean, that's it. Nothing else matters. Not to me. I mean, you've got to consider your own priorities. And isn't that a big part of what leaning toward wisdom is all about? Making sure that our priorities are straight? Sure it is. My document is constantly being revised. Years ago when I created this new document and named it When I Die, and the title has never changed, but the content has. And I put it in a folder that's sharing the same title, by the way, When I Die. And I will open this document, and I will edit this document, and I'll do that at least 4 times a year, some years more. Like since last spring, when I lost a lifelong best friend, Stanley. He was with me when we heard that Bourbon Street barker. This past April of 2014, I released a podcast episode that was entitled 6 Lessons I Learned in a Year of Suffering, Reflections on Losing a Lifelong Friend, because it was a year earlier, on May the 12th, 2013, that I published a blog and a podcast that was entitled As My Lifelong Best Friend Lay Dying. He died on that day. And when your best friend, a friend that you've always known, and I'm talking about since we were little boys, when a best friend dies, you soberly consider your own death. Days after publishing that, days after he died on May 12th, then on May 15th of last year, 2013, I wrote a blog post entitled Top 10 Ways to Prepare for the Funeral of Your Best Friend. There's links to these over the show notes, by the way, the website, leaningtowardwisdom.com. Just plug into the search bar the number 4027, and they'll take you right to it. My document contains some specifics about what I want when I die. Rhonda, my wife, isn't going to have to do anything other than follow my wishes. It's all spelled out in detail. She knows who I want to do what and how I want it done. And she knows what I care about most and what I have told her in the document. Adjust this if you like. I don't care. And that document stays updated in a Dropbox folder that she and I share. I don't think she's ever looked at the document. I'm rather certain that she's never opened the document. In fact, I'm rather certain she's never even opened the folder that contains the document. And I suspect she never will until I'm gone. And there's another copy of it on a USB drive that's locked away in a safe. And I just make sure that I keep it updated whenever a thought comes to mind about something that, yeah, okay, I want to change that. There's some other things in that folder, too. There's a letter to her. And then there are letters to my son and my daughter. I've even got a letter to a fellow servant at church. And in the document, I've also passed along some instructions about some of this online stuff, you know, passwords and other things. And I suspect, and I don't know, maybe there already is one and I just don't know about it, but I suspect there's a business waiting to be born that can help people with the digital footprint of a loved one who has passed on. I mean, Stanley, for instance, still shows up. He shows up in my Facebook feed. I don't mean as posts do, but, you know, in friends showing over to the side. He shows up in Google+. He shows up in all kinds of places. I'm rather pleased about that, to tell you the truth. So I don't know that I want it. I don't want it wiped away. I know that. But I do know that my digital footprint, it's way too big, and I don't have any notion that my family's going to be able to properly handle it or wrangle it in. I mean, shoot, I'm alive and I can't. But I've written a few pages that might help them. I must have edited the document When I Die and the other documents in that folder since Stanley's passing last May. I have to have done it at least 10 times. And I know that this last year, it's been an outlier. I know that I'm not going to maintain that mad kind of editing pace because, well, time does that. Softens things a little bit, you know. Takes the edge off. But I think there are some benefits of embracing the edge and not having the edge taken off. Some days I find benefits in embracing the edges that result in thinking about death and dying. Now, listen, right here, let me interject. I am not advocating some unsafe obsession with death, and I am completely against suicide because killing violates God's rules, and we have no right to kill anybody, ourselves included. Yes, I'm against abortion for the same reason. So I'm not talking about embracing some notion of these actions. I'm talking about avoiding taking the edge off death by thinking about what matters most. I'm talking about the things that we'd like to accomplish before we die and not avoiding that. Maybe some people think about making money. Now, I don't see how, but, you know, what do I know? You've likely heard the old adage that no dying man ever said, "I wish I'd spent more time at the office." Surely that's true. Surely. But I know some guys. I know some guys who seem unconvinced that they are not going to be able to take their money with them when they die. Money is their God. And sadly, it's not a God that can save them. But boy, they serve it like it can. And I wonder about those guys, and I wonder, are they going to be the one person as they lay dying to say, "Yeah, I wish I'd have made more money. I sure wish I'd have spent more time at work." I know thinking about death is hard, but you know, sometimes we need to endure hard. We need to avoid easy and simple. Sometimes. Sure, I know it's heavy stuff. I know it's sobering. It may be even depressing a little bit. I get that, but look at the benefits. Look at the benefits, and I haven't touched the hem of it, and it's pretty powerful to consider how it can help us grow, how it can help us be better. I grew up hearing sermons with titles like, "If I Died Tonight." Now, if you're a church-going type, you probably know the kind of sermon that would be. It's one where you're encouraged to consider all the things that you would do if you died tonight. All those things that you ought to do. You know, it's a pretty common exercise, really, to consider how your life would be different if you knew you only had a specific amount of time left. I've long said that there is no courage in asking the question, "What's the worst thing that can happen?" Doesn't take any courage to ask the question. The courage comes in answering the question. What is the worst thing that can happen? Thinking of my own death helps me do that. It helps me answer that question and many others. It's a worthwhile practice. And I need to make it even more worthwhile by putting into action all the things that death forces me to consider.
Sky when we walked in fields.
It's the timeless voice of Eva Cassidy. Eva Marie Cassidy, same middle name as my daughter. She died when she was 33 years old, November the 2nd, 1996. Born in February on the 2nd, 1963. She came from Washington, D.C. She got diagnosed with melanoma. Only had a few months to live. Ah, man, the voice is timeless. The record is Songbird. It was released in 1998. The song is Fields of Gold. Boy, her voice was. So what impact are you going to have? Not only in your death, but what impact are you going to have while you're alive? And consider eternity. Yeah, consider God. I'd be remiss if I didn't encourage you to do that, because eternity changes everything. My name is Randy Cantrell. I'm in Dallas, Fort Worth, Texas, inside the Yellow Studio.
There have been some that I've broken, but I swear in the days still left, we'll walk in fields of gold. We'll walk in fields of gold.
If you've got any thoughts about spiritual things, pardon me while I'm not going to preach a sermon, but I do want to give you a couple of resources. LetTheBibleSpeak.tv. Kevin Presley is an evangelist and he's a friend. And if you'll sign up, you can get early notification, at least as I'm recording this in September of 2014. Kevin's going to be producing some online videos. Yeah, some sermons. Spiritual stuff. I'll give you one other resource. FossilCreek.org. FossilCreek.org. It's a congregation where I serve as one of the elders. It's an important work to me. I think you might find some incredible resources there if you're looking for some spiritual answers. So I would encourage you to visit both of those sites. I appreciate you listening. Thanks for subscribing. Thanks for telling your friends about the podcast. And I promise I won't keep preaching. Thanks again.